We talk with our friend Sean Latch of the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine, who joins us for his monthly visit. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Happy almost February to you.
I know. It's hard to believe. Time has been, well, zipping here by.
Yeah, January, which can be a long month sometimes, but I feel like it's gone by pretty quickly, and here we are.
Yeah, I know. Wild.
Yeah, well, a lot of cool things coming up here, although February is a very short month, but yeah, a lot packed into it.
Yeah, traditionally very short month. My wife actually only gets a birthday on the years that have the extra day.
Oh, is she a leap year baby?
Yeah, yep. Wow. So I keep telling her she doesn't get a birthday this year, but she will dispute me on that.
So you're married to like a 12-year-old?
Yeah. She'll be 13 this year.
Wow.
I tell you. Don't tell anyone.
Now, when does she celebrate in the non-leap years?
So what she tells me, of course, is that when it's non-leap year, that she gets the whole month of February, which is,
Oh, wow.
But normally, yeah, so, but usually either she'll either do the 28th or the 1st or both. Typically, we end up doing both. Yeah.
It's two. Do it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Makes a whole lot of sense. We've got a brand new program starting this week, Friday night at the center. Tell us a little bit about Forward to the Moon.
Yeah, so of course, as you know, Artemis missions have, we launched Artemis 1 back in November, and it has returned to Earth, and this is a plan to return humans to the moon and hopefully to Mars and beyond. So this program really takes a look at the Artemis mission in depth. We're going to start off with some fun bits from La Voyage de la Lune, if you remember that old, 1902 or 1903, I think it was from, sort of the first science fiction piece. We're going to have a little clip of that.
The beginning. One where the rocket hits the moon,
hits the moon right in the eye, and then the moon cries, and then they go inside and they find these selenites, I think they're called, which are supposed to be these moon beings, and they try and capture one and bring it back to Earth. It's kind of a fun.
Was that the Lumiere brothers that...
Yeah, I think something like that. So we're going to just have a little clip of that at the beginning to kind of kick off the program in a fun way, and then of course jump into sort of looking a little bit at the Apollo missions and what they brought, and then of course jumping into Artemis. And we've talked about this over the last year or so. Of course, they haven't made a selection yet, but we're hoping we should be hearing something, because right now the plan schedule is 2024 for the first crewed mission. Mm-hmm. So they're going to take all of 23 to get, ramped up and all that. But we should be hearing sometime, hopefully in the next few months, about the first crewed mission. Now, we really all want to keep our fingers crossed that Jessica Meir is on Artemis 3, not 2.
2 is essentially going to orbit
Apollo
the moon.
8. Think of Apollo 8. It's going to orbit the moon. It will do an extended orbit, probably similar to, like Artemis 1, which did, this sort of extended orbit going farther out into space.
Scout the landing area.
Yeah, scout the landing area a little bit, though they're already planning for a South Pole landing for Artemis 3. But they're also sort of testing this, gateway location too. So, but hopefully she'll be on Artemis 3, because that's the one that's going to land. But Artemis 2, even Artemis 2 would be cool. But again, we're hoping she's the first one on the moon. So from Maine anyway. So that would be wonderful. But so this program takes a look at all of that and sort of the importance of going to the moon, why we went the first time, but also why we're going back. Some of the things that we get out of this type of human exploration.
I wonder now, I think of students that I have who, heck, their parents barely remember the last time we went to the moon, and they ask that question, and it's a long list, but from your perspective, what can we do on manned space flights that we can't do in unmanned missions?
Yeah, the robotic spacecraft have gotten much better, that is true. But I think, human missions allow you to do, stronger geology, to really look at things up close, to have the human eye, eyeball on it, if you will. So I think the geology, the understanding of the moon that we'll get. Also, whenever we do this human spaceflight, we end up pushing the boundaries, and we end up with lots of new technologies. The robotic ones, you get things from too, don't get me wrong. But the human ones, because you're pushing... the human body, you have to, create new ways of, doing things. And typically that's led to lots of different advances in medicines and materials that help us with anything related to, surgeries and all kinds of other things in that area. Even body imaging, our first flights to the moon, a lot of the technology ended up coming back and helping us improve body imaging that, further on went down the line to helping, you know, with things like CAT scans and ultrasounds right. and stuff like that. So there's always really good, you know, and advances in safety and things that will make its way to avionics too, into flight. So I think there's a lot of things that'll come out of it.
I think this week is the anniversary of the Apollo 14 mission, which also showed that if you can't hit a golf ball very far like me, man, you want to go to the moon and do it, because Alan Shepard, now he got under it a little bit, but what that baby carries on the moon.
Yeah, it's one of those things when you only have, you know, 1/6 of gravity, it you can smack a thing quite a bit farther, or throw a football farther, or, you know, the like. But yeah, it definitely is one of those things that's kind of fun too.
Other shows that are coming up, the family show on Sundays, Magic Treehouse Space Mission.
Yeah, that's a family favorite. Of course, the Mary Pope Osborne books, Magic Treehouse series. You join Jack and Annie and solve a variety of questions about our universe. But that's definitely a big family favorite. We've been doing lots of birthday parties with that this last month, of course, which has been fun with that. And then, of course, we have a new music show too.
Yeah.
February Foo Fighters, if you will. And so we're going to have the Foo Fighters, Dave Grohl and his crew, you might say, some of their fun hits, Everlong, Learn to Fly, The Sky is Our Neighborhood, whole bunch of those, which are set to music. And also a little bit of a tribute to, you know, the fallen band member as well. So, but looking forward to that. And then we do have some special programming, of course, the K-12 break, we always do.
Right.
2 o'clock daily. That week of the 20th through 24th, we have a variety of different programs. Monday, Polaris, The Mystery of the Polar Night. Tuesday, Astronaut. Secret of the Cardboard Rocket on Wednesday. Cosmic Recipe Thursday. And One World, One Sky, Big Bird's Adventure on Friday. So lots of different shows coming up for that week. Great chance to catch up on some that you may have missed. And also to have something fun to do with the kids, you know, during that break week and keep them occupied and things of that nature.
Absolutely. Want to mention this, it's not coming up till March, but we talked about it a few months back, but you've got a wonderful collaboration coming up in March with True North Theater.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. This is one of those things that we had planned in the BC, the before COVID times, and we're finally getting around to it. But Silent Sky is the story of Henrietta Leavitt. She's basically the person who developed the stellar classification scheme we use today. She was, quote unquote, a computer at Harvard back when, you know, women didn't get their due. And it tells the story of her life and some of her remarkable discoveries and you know, how she went about the astronomy that she did. So I think it's a really fun story. We're doing it in the dome, and that setting is really nice because we can actually show you the, you know, some of the things she observed up close and personal. Yeah, we're really looking forward to working with True North and on this production.
That sounds great. I can't wait to hear more about that. Also up in the skies this month, as we get to the brand new month here in a couple of days, a chance to see the comet. Let's see. It's C-2022-E3-ZTF.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Just
right off the tongue.
Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Yeah. So this comet, of course, was not discovered by a person like Hale-Bopp or Hyakutake or Halley's. This one, of course, basically by this Wiki Transit Facility, a robotic telescope out in California at Mount Palomar, discovered in 2022. It was the fifth comet discovered in March, hence the E3 bit there. So the month of March and then E being the fifth one. But this has become bright enough to see with the unaided eye. It's sometimes called a green comet right now because it has a bit of a greenish tint to it. And it's one that only comes around once every 50,000 years. So if you miss it this time, you know, probably not going to have a chance to do it again. But right now, and it's placed very well for us here in the Northern Hemisphere. In fact, tonight and over the next several nights, it's going to be right between the Big and Little Dipper if we get some clear skies. Binoculars will help because we're starting to get a little bit of moon glow. We're past first quarter moon, moving towards full moon later this week. So binoculars will help, but do look right between the Big and Little Dippers. It will look a little bit like a little bit of a fuzz. With the binoculars, you'll see a little bit of an extended tail with it as well. But definitely something to check out. And we really have it through the end of February or so. Towards the end of February, beginning of March, it's going to go below our horizon and become visible in the southern hemisphere. And actually, between sort of the evening of February 1st, morning of February 2nd is when it's going to make its closest approach to the Earth, made its closest approach to the sun back in around the 23rd of January or so. So it still will probably get just a little bit brighter over the next couple days here.
Nice. Now, and as Paul McCartney said, the Venus and Mars are all right tonight. A good month for seeing those two in the evening. If that's That's about it at night, right? In Jupiter in the mornings?
Well, we have Jupiter right now in the evening sky as well. Basically, Saturn is the end of January, basically, you know, tonight, tomorrow night, that's going to be it for Saturn. It's going to sink into the glow of sunset. Venus is getting higher. Jupiter is over in our southwestern sky as well. So Jupiter and Venus, the two really brightest things, you know, we see after the sun and moon, Venus being third and Jupiter being fourth, if you will. And then Mars is farther over in the eastern sky. But right now, Mercury behind the sun. Mercury is going to be emerging in the morning sky for the first portion of the month. And then Saturn basically going to be hidden for pretty much the month of February and reemerge in March in our morning sky once again.
All right. Now, you mentioned the Foo Fighters, Sean. And if I remember right, the term Foo Fighters was from World War II pilots who would see things they couldn't identify sometimes. And I was reading recently that the government is releasing some files about what we used to call unidentified flying objects. What's the official position on what we might learn and what people see when they think they see something?
Well, you know, to date, over 99.9% of this stuff can be explained away. A lot of times it is things that you know, we know of. There's autokinesis effect. There's things that just, you know, that in some cases have been military planes that have been misidentified. Mm-hmm. In fact, even just the other, this past couple of days, there was this sort of, what would you call it, whirlpool-like effect that was spotted over in Hawaii. And it was from the launch of a spacecraft, but it looked a lot, you know, very stunning. And, you know, they even some of the observatories saw it and they're like, oh, this is kind of, you know, but it is one of those things that there are some things that are, you know, have been, you know, not quite identified. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, people are always trying to figure out, but most of it gets explained away. Most astronomers will tell you they believe that there's life out there. It's just the distances are a big, big problem. Now, that being said, you know, maybe there is some advanced civilization out there that can get here, but, you know, we don't think if they did make it here that they would crash and, you know, things like that and have to stick something up your nose or other parts of your body to figure out how you work. So they wouldn't need the book that you were mentioning earlier. So, you know, but, and they're probably not here to abduct either men or women for those purposes either.
No.
So, but yeah, you know, it is one of those things that, you know, people are always very, the story or the, you know, the idea of life beyond Earth is something that's really one of those things we're waiting to figure out. You know, Carl Sagan, in his book, Pale Blue Dot, talks about the great demotions, how we thought we were the center of the universe. No, we're a planet that goes around the star, or the sun. And the sun must be the center. Nope, it's one in the Milky Way of about, you know, 400 billion. Well, then the Milky Way, nope, sorry. But the last great demotion will be when we discover life, either intelligent or even if it's just, you know, just life elsewhere off of planet Earth that is not, you know, of our origin. I think that will revolutionize the way people look at things.
Well, and even, you know, the definition of the term life. It sure seems like it from what we've learned in the last decade or so that there was life of some kind on Mars at some point. If you have water, you have life, right?
Possibly. I mean, there's definitely the building blocks of life there. We haven't found, you know, full-fledged, you know, microbes there yet, but we found building blocks. And we do think that, you know, some of these places that have water in the solar system could have forms of life. Europa is probably one of the best places that we're looking for it. Or we'll be looking for it because of the ocean underneath that's heated by the sort of the gravitational pull on that object, and has a, you know, a warmer ocean underneath. But most folks think there's probably life out there. One of the other problems we have with life is we base it on what we know, which is carbon-based, but maybe there's stuff out there based on silicon, maybe other things, you know. So it's hard to say, and we also look at it having to have water. But we found, you know, even creatures here on Earth that can live in, you know, undersea vents that are the temperatures hotter than the boiling point, or on Antarctica where the temperatures are really cold, you know, and Mars, you know, we talked about the cold temperatures. I mean, typically Mars is around 10 to 20 below zero. That's the average temperature on Mars. You get warm days where it can get up to 40 degrees, you know, a balmy summer there. But yeah, I mean, you know, so there, life is pretty hardy and can survive in some of these really crazy places. So we'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. Well, great stuff. Sean Latch, Versant Power Astronomy Center, and of course, the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. Sean, thanks as always. We'll see you in a few weeks.
Sounds good.